Today, I'm welcoming back onto Radio Gorgeous an author journalist who's based in Dublin with her family, who she lives with. She writes for Sunday Independent, Condé Nast Traveller, and Woman and Home. She has written many books, and this is her fifth novel. It's called The Glorious Guinness Girls, and she is Emily Hurricane. Hi, welcome back to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back on Radio Gorgeous. How are you?
Very, very well. I hope you're well, because I'm going to ask you about your book, because it's your first, The Glorious Guinness Girls is your first historical novel, isn't it?
That is correct. Yes. Yeah. So it's my sixth book. It's my fifth novel. And it's my first work of historical fiction.
So why The Guinness Girls?
So I, as a journalist, which I have been for, 15, 16, 17 years now, I ended up writing quite a lot about the Guinnesses in general, and those three girls, Eileen, Maureen, and Una Guinness in particular, because they crop up at so many different intersections of Irish and also British life. So they crop up in, obviously, manufacturing and brewing. They also crop up in politics. They crop up in architecture. I mean, if you look at Ireland, so many of our finest buildings, including some of our state buildings, so the Irish Embassy in London, some of our government buildings are former Guinness homes. So Guinness is just one of these names that keeps happening in all of these different parts of Irish cultural, political, and business life. And those three in particular, Eileen, Maureen, and Una, and I wrote about them so often in a factual capacity. And then one day, it just kind of arrived fully formed, this amazing idea, oh my God, I'd love to write a novel about those three girls.
But the novel is imagined, isn't it? Even though you know a lot about them, but this is imagining their life.
Exactly. So it is a process of taking the available facts. So, you know, you can't pretend that somebody wasn't born when they were born. You can't pretend they didn't marry who they married. You have to stick quite closely to the available information, the known facts of their life. But then within that, as long as you're totally upfront about the fact this is a novel, I made this up, this is not a work of history, this is a fiction book, you can kind of do what you want. So I have a story that is invented, and I have characters who are also invented, interacting with the real people, the Guinness sisters, their parents, for example, the men they married, various different people who form part of their lives, and they are factual. And then the sort of fiction side of it mixes in with the factual. So you have a boundary, a framework that is real, and then within that, an awful lot of, you know, fiction, basically, story invented and created.
Such fun to do. Now tell us about the Glorious Guinness Girls, because why were they more special than anybody else at that time? And they were massive celebrities.
So they were, the oldest of them is Eileen. Eileen was born in 1904 and she died in 1999. So the three of them more or less span the entire 20th century. And they were firstly, fabulously rich, very, very, very rich, which was important. Then they were also, and you can see it even now when you look at the photos of them, they were actually really quite beautiful. And often you don't see that. You hear these stories about how amazing somebody was, and then you see the photos, and whether it's a trick of the style of the time, which is so different to ours, or different standards of beauty, but sometimes you look at the photos of people and you go, well, I'm not really seeing it. But with them, I really could see it. And also they happened to come out, which, you know, was the thing that girls of their kind of background did in those days. They were brought out in the very early 1920s. So they ended up intersecting with these new elements of British society, because they came out in London, one of which was, you know, this kind of rise of the popular press and the need within that popular press for social diaries, which we're all so familiar with now. But this was relatively early in the arrival of social diaries, and they were tailor-made for it, because the other thing then that they intersected with was the kind of roaring 1920s, so the bright young people of the 1920s in London. And we know them mostly now from the novels of Evelyn Waugh, well, particularly that first novel, Vile Bodies, which in fact is dedicated to Brian Guinness and his wife, Diana Mitford, and the novels of Nancy Mitford also, who have really encapsulated that kind of roaring 20s, jazz, cocktails, endless fancy dress parties, romps through London where you're trying to, you know, kind of create a scavenger list of items to be, you know, kind of ticked off. And it was all kind of, you know, madcap good fun and hilarity. And the girls arrived in London at exactly the right time for this, and they ended up getting really involved in that kind of scene. So they were in and out of social diaries, their photographs were in all the papers and the magazines, and they were part of this little gang of, you know, very madcap young people, hell-bent on having a really good time for themselves in the aftermath of the First World War, before the great crash of 1929 pretty much brought an end to that particular era. So it was a fascinating period of time in which there were loads of stars, but the three of them were very much part of it. And then also, I think the fact they're sisters. I think there's something, you know, there is definitely a thing about sisters.
Exactly. And I've looked up after reading your book, I always read a book and then save the kind of evidence till afterwards, because I want to kind of imagine it. And then, and I saw them, they are stunningly beautiful. They look like angels. They have bright gold hair and bright blue eyes and heart-shaped faces and stunning clothes and are elegant without even trying. Also, the thing about them is that you wrote about parties so well, and I know that writing about parties is particularly difficult.
I agree. I love writing about parties. I actually think that, I mean, when I began researching this book, initially I thought, okay, I've got to do a lot of research here. And then I began reading, and I realized that in a funny way, I'd already done a lot of research, because I spent an enormous amount of my young adolescence reading the books that I was talking about just now, Evelyn Waugh, Nancy Mitford. Those are books about parties. I mean, Evelyn Waugh in particular writes just so brilliantly about parties. He's so incredibly clever at the small details, the intersections between people, the conversations. He's so good at it. So I think that maybe I had been subconsciously almost trying to deconstruct how does he do it, and also seeing parties that I went to almost in the term, like seeing them almost as descriptions by Evelyn Waugh, because I think I read about them before I, you know, when I was too young really to be going to many parties. So in a way, that all came together, and I mean, I love writing about parties now much more than I love going to them, I'm going to be totally honest, which is really sad. But I did spend a good 15 years, I would say, very enthusiastically going to parties and really taking it very seriously, the going to parties.
Fantastic. Now, can you tell us about their different characters? Because obviously they really are individuals.
Yes. And that was another thing that I was quite intrigued by, that they, even at this remove in time, those three girls have very distinct characters that come out in everything that I read about them. So the oldest one, Eileen, was the most aloof of the three. I think that she was a very elegant person, I think reasonably quiet within herself. But, you know, definitely that kind of touch of aloofness to her. Whereas Maureen, the middle one, who was personally my favourite, Maureen turned into a kind of a monster later in her life. Much later, she was the model for the caricature that Barry Humphreys created, Dame Edna Average. That was based on Maureen. But before she became that really rather rude, abrasive, and very snobbish person, which she was in her later life, she was, I know from people who knew her, she was a mesmerizing person. She had so much energy. She had quite a lot of natural charisma. I suspect she was the smartest of the three girls. She mm-hmm. certainly was the wittiest. I think that her enjoyment of her life was massive. I think more than any of the others, she loved being Maureen Guinness. She absolutely loved it. And I think that she had a really kind of wicked sense of humor and a very strong sense of herself that could lead her to be really rude, but just so much energy that I was completely charmed by her. And then Una, the youngest, also the quietest, she believed that she was her father's favorite, and she may well have been. She was the sweetest of the three of them. She was the most maternal, which in a way was very tragic because she also suffered great loss. She lost three children, which was, that is so tragic and such a difficult thing. And at different ages, a grown-up boy, a daughter of 14 and a baby. So that's a lot of loss. And for somebody who was a very maternal person, and she was always, I think she was a gentle person, a kind person. And fundamentally, I think that she was probably the one of the three who, in a sense, was frustrated creatively. I imagine that in a different setup at a different time, with a different set of expectations around her, I think that she probably would have been possibly an artist of some kind. She certainly surrounded herself with writers and artists in her later life, and was a kind of a patron of writers and artists. But I get the sense with her that she would also have liked to create herself.
Very good. So I was going to ask which Guinness girl do you relate to most, but you've already answered it for me.
Well, I certainly like Maureen the most. I don't know if I relate to her.
I relate to her. I thought she was the most like me, says it as she is, party animal, yeah. The one that disrupts the family, you know, the family disruptor, yeah. And the most ambitious, I'd say.
Also. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely.
Because the other two married second sons, but she got the Duke, you know. It's quite
she did, that's right, she did. The Marchess of Dufferin and Ava, she did terribly well. I think she had a lot of drive, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. The Guinness drive. So also, the story isn't just parties, because the first sort of third of the book is setting up the story, which is more political in Ireland, isn't it?
Yes. So when I began looking into the background of the girls' lives, even though, sorry, I knew, obviously, the key dates, the Irish War of Independence and the Irish Civil War, which ran roughly from 1919 through, first of all, the War of Independence ending in 1921, then the Civil War running 1922-23. Obviously, I knew that these things happened at the same time as these girls were being brought up in Dublin in a house called Glenmarine, but I'd never really put the two things together. And then I read this detail that just, I just found it to be so absorbing. The story goes that, so the house they grew up in was in fact two houses. There was North House and there was South House, and there was this funny little footbridge between the two. And in a couple of different Guinness history accounts, I read this detail that the girls were able to stand on that footbridge and they were able to watch the burning of the forecourts in Dublin in June 1922, which I put into the book. They wouldn't have seen very much, but they could see the smoke rising up through the trees, because between them and the forecourts was mostly trees, but they could see this, you know, this act of violence, which was one of the key acts within the Irish Civil War between the anti-treaty and the pro-treaty forces. And they were able to stand there and watch it. And that kind of gave me that sort of goosebumpy moment where you kind of really, for the first time, I felt the interaction of their personal lives and the broader sweep of Irish, but also Anglo-Irish history. And they would have been so, you know, they would have been kind of 16, 14, 13 at that age. I doubt they were particularly politically minded. I doubt they had any very clear sense of what was going on in this country in which they were really only part citizens. Because even though, you know, they lived in Ireland and were brought up there, very much England was where they looked. They knew they were going to London for their coming out. They weren't Irish, really. And I don't imagine that they were watching this with any great sense of engagement, much more than, you know, this is an interesting spectacle.
And but it's just frightening. They might have been quite scared.
They were, and they probably would have been, although I suspect excited as much as scared,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
I mean, I think of myself at that age, I would have thought it was great fun. Now I would be scared and horrified, and I would think of the terrible waste and the human sacrifice and all those things. But at 14, I would have gone, oh, this is brilliant.
Fireworks.
Drama, exactly, excitement. So yeah, there was this very interesting unfolding of a political and a historical landscape around them, and they're in the middle of it just leading their lives.
Fantastic. So it's out now, isn't it? The Glorious Guinness Girls, Three
That's right.
Sisters, One Shared Destiny, and it's published by Headline. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous and telling us all about these fabulous, gorgeous girls.
Thank you so much for having me on and listening to me tell you about them. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.